I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. Anjanita Prevost aged out of the foster care system at the age of 18. Resourceful and ambitious with a drive for success, she shares her amazing story as well as the qualities, skills, and mindset she tapped into to leverage her network to get to who she is today, which is a feminine leadership expert. She teaches others about the power of building social capital to get what you want. You will be inspired by her infectious energy and simple ideas to build great connections. Anjanita Prevost, welcome to Soul Sister Conversations.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have this conversation with you because it's a different conversation, and I've been following some of the things that you've been doing and with respect to networking and women and the empowerment. So, but you have a story and how you got to where you were. And I don't know if you call it your motto or your tagline, but you said, don't let the glitz and glam fool you. You were aged out of the foster care system in the U.S. at 18 years old and have experienced every financial hardship anyone could possibly imagine. And you say being homeless, jobless, careless, cashless, and parentless. But you went on to work in Hollywood as a body double and music video dancer. And today you are an award-winning feminine leadership expert. You know, so it's easy in a few sentences to go, you were this and ba-ba-da-ba, you were that, now you're this and lead this amazing life. But what do you mean, don't let the glitz and glam fool you?
Well, I love glamour and luxury and opulence. I love all of those words. And, you know, one of the things that I had to fight for when I was aged out of the foster care system was essentially my financial freedom and financial independence. Mm. Because when you're aged out of the system, you're aged out with zero. You know, when I was aged out, now they have more programs available and support for foster kids. And I think some foster kids actually get scholarships to go to college. But when I was aged out, you know, I didn't receive any support from the state of California. No offense. But financial freedom, financial independence was always at the root of everything. And I worked very hard to acquire the things, you know, that I've acquired along the way. And I love, you know, being able to do those, you know, luxury things. And now, you know, the way the world is, you know, it's we don't put value on that. But back in the day, it was nice to have a nice car. It was nice to have beautiful clothes and you know, a beautiful home and all of the above. So my brand tends to be very opulent, over the top, eccentric, you know. And so when people see me, they tend to prejudge. They tend to, you know, they right. have a different persona in mind. And I like to start with that sentence, don't let the glitz and glam fool you, because, you know, there's a story there. There's some nitty-gritty, you know, tears and
sure.
hardships.
When you were in the foster care system and when you're getting close to being aged out, what was your mindset? Because you say you were very resourceful. You had four jobs by the time you were 18. Do you remember having thoughts about, I'm going to be successful? Because this could have been a story that went either way.
Well, this is the interesting thing. When I was 15, I remember I was placed in a group home at 15. And I don't know where it came from, but again, I always had that desire for more. And I just thought I should get a job because, you know, when you're in foster care, you get a small allowance from your foster family. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to shop like other teenage girls and do the things that other teenage girls were doing. So I immediately you know, like literally got a job at a real estate office. And it started with a flyer. And the flyer said they were looking for, you know, kids that would go out and hand out flyers in the neighborhood. And that's how it started. But me, being ambitious, I asked if there was anything else that I could do. And I ended up answering the phones on the weekend, starting from the time I was 15 to the time I was about 17. So not bad.
So you didn't mind asking for what you wanted, even at that age?
Even at that age. And that's really what I teach women. One of the things I teach women is how to ask for what you want and spot those opportunities. So, you know, it started off, you know, oh, just, you know, grab some flyers and, you know, hand out flyers. But then I thought, well, is there anything else that I can do here? And then, you know, they knew that I was, you know, a foster kid and they wanted to help. And they said, you know what, why don't you come in on Saturday and Sunday and answer the phones? And every Saturday and Sunday, I woke up at about 7. I think I left the house at about 8. I was on the bus and I took a 15-minute bus ride to the real estate office and I worked 8 hours. That was my life.
And how would you describe your mindset? Because you said you call yourself ambitious. You know, a lot of maybe young women would maybe not feel, you know, very self-confident. Would you have described yourself as self-confident at that age? Or it was just a survival mode, like I want money so that I can buy the things that I want as other 15-year-olds?
I think on the surface, I was confident, but under the surface, I was very self-conscious. I was very unsure. I was very embarrassed and ashamed because I was a foster kid.
Sure.
And that's not a great label. You know, people look down on you. They judge you. They think you're a problem child. They think you're a child, a parentless child, a child that no one wants. I mean, it's tough. So it was a tough experience.
For sure. And once you were aged out of the system, how did you get to Hollywood, or how did that sort of, you were released from the system, and what's your next step as someone who has to then survive on their own?
Again, it's so funny, you know, looking back, I think, what was I thinking? Gosh, I whenever I'm having a bad day, I should just tap into the younger version of myself because
absolutely.
She did some crazy things. So I had this vision once again. I was a vision, a dream that I wanted to go to Hollywood and I wanted, you know, to make it in Hollywood. So my foster parent, she ended up asking her granddaughter to help me get to Los Angeles. And at that time I was in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so her granddaughter said, you know what, why don't you come and you can sleep on the sofa? And I hopped on the plane. I think I was on Southwest Airlines, and I hopped on the plane. And then I was sleeping on the sofa. And within about, I kid you not, within about, I want to say like days, I ended up at a casting call in Hollywood, Burbank, California, to be exact. And I was on a casting call and they picked me out. And they said, you know, we want you to be in a movie, you know, as an extra. And then they said, you know, you're going to make, I think at that time it was something like $50 a day, you know, and I was going to get to work in a movie. And so I thought, oh, wow. And then from there, I signed up with a casting agent. And they said, we have lots of work. We can get you lots of work. And I literally hopped on the plane and I had all of my stuff in storage and I contacted an ex-boyfriend and I said, can you help me? I want to get back to LA. Can we get a U-Haul and drive me to Los Angeles? I'll pay for the gas. I'll pay for the U-Haul and then I'll pay for your plane ticket back to, you know, San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And then I settled in, I rented an apartment and that's how I started my Hollywood journey, just like that. But I immediately, again, stepped into another world, and I was able to generate income. I started working on movies. I started, you know, doing like bit parts. And within about 30 days, I became SAG-AFTRA, literally. In 30 days, I joined the union. And, you know, I had, you know, a job, essentially, working.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, things are starting to unfold for you. And I'm always curious about this mindset or this intention that you have behind, or this great desire. And I'm thinking that had to be linked to, you know, being in foster care. And I'm trying to think, you know, what does being in foster care teach you about life? What did you learn? What skills did you walk away with that you were able to apply and be able to start generating income with, for yourself without, you know, education or, you know, and you said, I'm even walking through this world with this label on my head. So what did you learn coming out of foster care? What skills were you able to develop that were you able to put to use immediately?
I think for me, I didn't want to be a statistic. And so I remember when my probation officer, this was early on when we were sort of at the court phase and I was still going to court with my biological mother at the time. And, you know, he said to me, he said, you know, kids like you don't make it. Mm-hmm. And I really see something in you. I really see that you can do something. And that gave me some hope. And I had teachers at school. I had social workers. You know, they saw something. I don't know what they saw at the time, but they saw something and they gave me some hope and motivation. But then there were people that didn't see, you know, great things in me. And so I was always working literally with a yin and the yang, you know, like, you know, one group of people were like, yes, you're the best, you're the greatest. And then another group of people would think, oh, you're nothing. And you're not gonna, you know, resort to anything. So I think that I just had in my heart, I had a dream, I had a desire to make something of myself. And I think that carried me, you know, along the way. But I always, always, always had that self-doubt, that insecurity, uncertainty. You know, I was always second-guessing myself. I mean, even in Hollywood, I mean, I was, you know, in Hollywood, I put myself in a place where, once again, I was being judged. Mm. And this time I was being judged, you know, how you look, you know, how you show up, you know, everything. And I remember thinking, gosh, you know, am I good enough for this? Am I pretty enough? My body, is my body, you know, good enough for this? And all of those things, you know, that happens when you go into the quote unquote entertainment business. So I think it was just the dream, the desire that kept me going. Because let me tell you, I literally, you know, would wake up some days and I think, what the heck am I doing? You know, am I okay? You know?
Yeah. And so now you're working as a dancer and a body double, and you're in the entertainment business. And how do we go, ba, 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 and ta-da, you're a feminine leadership expert, right? Like what are the stepping stones, you know, the big rocks? We don't need to know all the little rocks, but the development of a person, because that's what you're hearing underneath, you know. And I think anybody listening is like, if they're doing something they haven't done before, it's like they have this great desire to be successful or to be able to get to a certain point in life, but they're still full of doubt no matter, you know, who you are or what you do. And you're just echoing that back for all of us. But then how did you get from, you know, Hollywood to helping women leverage their network and all the wonderful empowering things that you talk about?
Well, I think, you know, the body double was really the role that was the pivotal moment, because when I became a body double, I started to feel more confident because I started to see what other women were going through, because I would show up on set and I started to see that other women had insecurities, and these were women that, you know, were were, you know, stars and beautiful. Mm. And I thought they were perfect. And then I started to notice that they also have insecurities and they also, you know, have self-doubt and they're not as confident as one would imagine, you know, when you see them on, you know, on stage or on the red carpet. So I started to go, okay, well, you know what, maybe I'm not so bad after all. And, you know, body doubling is somewhat of a prestigious job in Hollywood, you know, because essentially, you know, you are quote unquote loaning your parts to other people. So it's, you know, it says right. a lot about, you know, your physical, you know, make. And, I think I just developed another level of confidence. And ironically, after that, I no longer wanted to be in front of the camera that way, you know, because mm-hmm. my job literally was like most of the time in a bikini, in a form-fitted dress, you know, like, mm-hmm. that was my job. And so all of a sudden I thought, well, you know what, I want to do something different. I think there was something inside of me that I felt that I was more than just, you know, a bikini body. And that's really how I segued into the work that I'm doing today, because I knew that I at that point, I knew I was smart because obviously, you know, I'd survived. Absolutely. And people liked listening to me. I gave great advice, not because I was, you know, college educated. It's because I had a vast, you know, experience. And people loved listening to my stories because guess what I shared? I shared my mistakes, and you can learn from one's mistakes. And so that's how it started. But networking was really the core piece that kept me going. You know, I shared earlier about sleeping on the sofa. My foster mother, you know, she, you know, said, oh, well, why don't you go, you know, and ask, you know, ask my granddaughter. And so I ended up sleeping on the sofa. And again, it was always networking. I always leveraged my network. Every time I hit a hard point, you know, and experience hardship, I was always able to tap into my network. Mm-hmm. And I started to see that this was a really, like, it was powerful. It was something that I could, you know, leverage. And so I built it into my business model. And then I thought, wait a minute, you know, there's something here. And I decided to niche down, you know, that phrase so well.
Riches and niches.
Yes. Blue Ocean, Peter.
Yes.
Zero to One, all of the above, Christopher Lockhead, you know, all of those big marketing gurus and in Silicon Valley. And so I said, you know what, maybe this is the niche. Maybe this is what I should focus on. And voila, here I am. And I have Femme 500, a global feminine leadership network. And we have, you know, about 100 members. I'm the creator of Networking in Stilettos, the number one business networking event for women. And, you know, it's just one of those skill sets, again, that I cultivated along the way. But now I see that, you know, it's an asset, especially when you look at the gender equity gap, which is what, you know, we all know and everyone talks about. There's so much data around that, but there's actually a gender network gap. You know, we don't have the networks, the connections, the communities, the collaborations, all of the above to support us. So here I am filling the network gap. So that's really my station in life.
And I love at the end of your email, you have another little statement that says networking can open doors, degrees cannot, because there are lots of people, pardon me?
Story of my life.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's so many people, I hear the story a lot from people who've either started their education and maybe didn't finish it or wished they had went on. And so maybe are feeling like they don't have a way out because society has put some sort of value on education. But you're really here to tell us that we could be successful by leveraging our network. And so let's talk about that, because you talk about there's no reason for anyone to be stuck. What advice do you have to people who say, you know what, I'm stuck, and I don't know what to do. Well, I don't know how to grow my business. I don't, you know, people might want new friends. They may want a new life. How do you get unstuck using your network?
Well, the first thing to do is, and this is something that I noticed, we as women, we want to be everything and do everything, right? Mm. And in order to leverage, you know, monetize, right? You want to monetize. You have to capitalize on your skill sets, your expertise, and your thing. And I see too many women that they try to take on things that they're not necessarily good at, and they veer off in a direction that keeps them stuck and prevents them from making money. When in actuality, if you just zero in, and then this reminds me of another book, Gay Hendricks, Zone of Genius. If you just zero in on that thing that you're great at, then you position yourself, right, to connect with the right people. You can't help but be exposed to opportunities. I mean, that's what happened to me. People started asking me, you know, can you connect me with so-and-so, or you know, a lot of people, oh my gosh. And that's how I created Monetize Your Network. Mm. It was, you know, literally people saying like, you're really good at this, but it was because I was out there doing what I do best. And so that's the first thing that I always say, do what you do best and people will notice and they'll pay you for it. But if you're trying to do something that you're not great at, or you're in this mode of learning without earning because you think that you have to go and do something else to make money, no, I don't agree with that. Mm.
If someone can't recognize what they're good at, do you have tips or tricks around to get people to tune into that? Because I think people tend to be very critical of themselves and go, well, I don't know anything. You know, I have one of my discovery questionnaires I would give clients. And one of the questions is, what is unique to you? And it comes back empty a lot of the time. You know, I don't know. And do you have any advice that you give women around that? How to identify what you're good at? It seems simple enough.
Because we think that it's outside of us. We think that it's something that we have to acquire. It needs to be a learned skill, right? Versus it's your God-given talent. You know, networking, you know, literally every pivotal moment in my life, everything from the real estate to, you know, we didn't talk about this, but my work in beauty and fashion to my work in entertainment, everything was literally related to me connecting with someone, like another person. And that was it. Like it was my thing. It literally saved my life. Mm. So for me, I didn't think that it was a big deal because it was just what I do. Mm. But now I talk to women, thousands of women, and they're telling me, oh my gosh, I don't do it this way. I need to learn how to do it your way. You see? And that's what we do. So I could run off and try to be like a tech guru and learn, you know, some fancy way of technology or something like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, like I'm making this up. But that's not my, you know, according to Gay Hendricks, that's not my zone of genius. But if I veer off and go down that path, it would be very difficult versus right. This path is, it's easy. It's effortless. It, you know, it doesn't take a lot of work. You know, people come to me, people are interested. So I say it's so close to you that, that when you discover it, you're going to be mad at yourself for you know, making your life harder than it had to be. Trust me.
I love that. It's so close to you. You can't even see it. Really. And it's so true. Like so many people discount what's easy. We tend to go, no, it must be much more difficult than this. I'm not doing it right if it's easy, and tend to discount what their natural skills are. Exactly. So you say you leverage every single person who comes into your life, you know, but other people mostly size others up and put expiration dates or think, oh, they can't help me. Can you kind of speak to that about leveraging people that come into your life?
Yes. So what I do is I work with something I call a social capital matrix. And again, you know, networking doesn't work because people are quote unquote networking, but they're not networking to build social capital. So if you're networking to build social capital, what you do is you enter conversations, right? With the idea of exploring, you know, the long term of, you know, sort of, you know, how can I benefit long term, you know, building a rapport with this individual. So what happens is most people come into, you know, let's say on social media, you DM someone, they, you know, they DM you back. It's all about the sale. But for me, I take a step back. I don't like forcing the sales process. What I like to do is I like to discover, you know, where does this person fall in my life? You know, so for me, I'll give you an example. So the matrix looks like this. Friend is always on the list because it's nice to meet new friends. Mm-hmm. Joint venture partners. These are people that you could, you know, do a podcast, you know, interview with, you know, a summit, you know. Collaboration partners, same thing. You collab on an idea or a project. Referral partners, you know, there are people that are great for referrals. They'll just refer people to you and that's it. You know, they may not want to engage in your business, but if you present yourself and you have a great conversation, they could very well become a referral partner. And then I look at other areas like connecting with decision makers, connecting with investors, connecting with men in business. This is really important. A lot of women discount men because we are in this whole, you know, I talk about feminine leadership, but we're in this women's empowerment movement. And they think, oh, well, I don't really need to talk to men. I don't need to do business with men. And they miss out on opportunities to do business because they think that, you know, a man's not, you know, part of the equation. So for me, because I go into every situation that way, I can find an opportunity. I mean, that's how we met. You know,
absolutely.
Because, you know, Eleanor introduced us and I met Eleanor and then, you know, I said, oh, you were on this show. Oh my gosh, that's great. Can you introduce me to the host? You know, $1 billion Rolodex. There
it goes, you know? And not of being afraid to ask for what you
want. I you should have seen me. It only took me about 30 seconds.
It's true. But I think a lot of people don't ask for what they want or think that they're being too forward or who knows, whatever reason that would hold people back from getting what they want. And I like this idea of building social capital because I do think, you know, a lot of people do networking incorrectly. It's a constant sale. Like they're looking at you like a price tag. And it's like, could we please just build a relationship? Do you think I'm actually going to buy from you on the spot? I don't even know you. But if you build a relationship, then you're more inclined to go, oh, hey, you know, I may not personally buy, I might, but you're right. You could refer somebody else and go, you know what? You'd be actually a perfect fit for this person. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'll tell you a story. I have a friend, a dear friend of mine, Christine. I've known her for so many years. And we were friends in the beauty industry. And we used to do trade shows in Los Angeles. And I brought her into my world. And we talked about doing, you know, some JVs together. But ironically, it wasn't until about 8 years into our friendship, she started referring people to me. Literally all the time. I don't have to ask. Now she just refers people to me. So I'm not saying that, you know, you need to wait 8 years, but the point is you never know, you know, so don't underestimate the power of that. And that's why I'm not ever at a loss because I have people all the time reaching out to me, people that I'm connected with, referring, you know, introducing, like talk about a revolving door of opportunities. That's my life.
Real. Absolutely. And is that why you called yourself a feminine leadership expert or what about that title rings true for you?
Well, it's partly because for me, I'm very much feminine, but I work in my masculine, you know, side. You know, I'm very rooted in structure. And also I think in business to truly be successful as a woman, you need those feminine and you need those masculine traits to balance. But I don't necessarily, I don't identify with sort of the feminist term. You know, I would consider myself more of an evolved, or I'll say modern day. But for me, it's about leading your own life, and then you can lead others, but very much rooted in being feminine and standing in your feminine power and cultivating those skill sets. So that's why, you know, networking is, you know, number one, communication, sales, self-promotion, presentation, you know, that for me, that makes a powerful businesswoman. And that's what my ultimate goal is for women, is to be powerful businesswomen. So I don't talk about, you know, being an influencer, you know, or being a star. Like, it's about being a real businesswoman.
You're focused on helping people monetize their businesses.
Absolutely. And,
you know, so it's great that you're meeting people, but how do you, you know, create your business using the power of social capital?
And you have to have those skill sets, and you have to have that mindset. I think in this whole social media landscape, too many women are focusing on being quote unquote influencers, but most influencers, they're not building businesses. They're not, you know, transforming industries or taking on major initiatives in the world. They're just, you know, promoting their bodies or, you know, a product. You know, they don't have a position. They don't have a strong voice, in my opinion. So for me, it's about cultivating those skill sets.
And what do you think the skill sets are to be a powerful networker? To really be able to, you know, build your business around social capital or based on the power of that. What are the skill sets that you want to see people develop?
Number one is communication.
Say more about that.
well, I'll use Warren Buffett. I love sort of you know, leveraging the quotes from billionaires. But he said that to increase your net worth by 50%, hone your communication skills. And that's number one. That's one of the reasons why networking doesn't work for women, because women don't know how to communicate. They do not know how to answer the question. So what do you do? And so what I do is I help women answer that. I call it a $1 million introduction in 1, 2, or 3 minutes, because you need to be able to answer that question. Because what if you're in Starbucks and, you know, you're standing next to someone and, you know, you're about to order and they ask you, so what do you do? And then you can't answer the question. What if, you know, that's the person that can get you the job,
right?
You know, or refer you the client, or, you know, so for me, it's that communication piece. And then I would definitely say selling is important, but selling in terms of self-promotion, presentation skills, very important. And another one that's at the top of my list is negotiation skills. You got to know how to negotiate.
That seems like a tough one, or one that's going to require some learning. Because when you say negotiate, how does negotiation show up for you? Or how did you learn to get good at that? Or,
well, I know that, and there are, you know, people that teach negotiation at a very high level. But for me, it goes back to asking for what you want. And it's a two-way process for me. So when I ask for what I want, I'm confident about asking, because you know what? I'm confident that I'm going to be able to deliver something in return. So it's a two-way situation. It's not one way. Most of the time people go into a situation and they know that they don't have anything to offer. So therefore they can't put anything on the table. So for me, I can always put something on the table because I have something of value to offer. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who it is. I always position it that way. How can I help them? And then I know, okay, I'm going to ask, but when they come back, I will have something that's just as important for them, just as enticing for them.
And I'm hearing the word confident. You know, you don't mind asking because you know that you can help, or you know there's some way you can figure it out. So I think that's a really, you know, strong undercurrent running through when you can make an ask or counter something because you're confident in your ability to do so.
Exactly. I mean, that's really what it's about. But going back to social capital, connecting with people, and everyone, it doesn't matter how, you know, important or wealthy they are, we're all human. And you can provide value. And this is another thing that women struggle with because they think, oh, well, that person is, you know, they're a billionaire or they're, you know, famous. And so what do I have to offer? You'd be surprised. But it takes connecting to discover, you know, what is their thing? You know, what do they need? And I guarantee you there's always something. There's always there. There's always a way for you to provide value. There's it exists. I kid you not. I see this every single time.
You said what? I was watching some of your things on YouTube, and I suggest people go check you out because you're teaching, and it's very good. And one of the things that you say is that women tend to practice diminishment by default. Yes. Can you talk more about that? Because I think that's something good to highlight. Not every woman, but that people tend
women
to
in our circle.
practice diminishment. Yeah, I've never done that.
not in our circles. Not so many people. Dear. But but no, I think it's a habit, you know. So when someone compliments, you know, you, the first thing you say is, "Oh gosh, I don't look that
this old thing."
Oh my gosh, you know, or oh, here's a good one. So, you know, you probably are familiar with the stats, and I think it's out of the U.S. So when a man applies for a job, he only has to be 30% qualified. However, a woman, 65%, she won't even like pick up like the application or print out her, you know, her resume.
Yes.
So
it's true
that it ties into that, you know, that we're not enough. We need more. We don't have enough, you know, and that's that diminishment. So, you know, for me, I think, and it goes back to when I was a body double, I think like that started to turn it around because I noticed, okay, everyone is suffering from this whole confident lack of confidence, low self-worth, it doesn't matter. So, okay, I'm not that bad. I mean, that's literally what happened to me. But I'm not going to say that, you know, there are days where I don't feel as confident, but I'm rooted in my belief. You know, like I have a strong belief within myself. And so that carries me forward.
I like that, rooted in my belief, because you're right. We can all have bad days or wane in our confidence. But when you have a rooted belief that you actually are good enough, you can always return to that. Sometimes we lose sight of it, but it's always there. And I think it's making that strong and loud so that we can hear it.
Absolutely.
What are some mistakes that people make in networking? I mean, we've already touched on some, you know, not being clear in your message and maybe not having their communication skills up to speed or diminishing yourself. What are some of the big ones that you see that people, mistakes that they make?
Discounting people.
Discounting the power of your network, you mean? Other people?
Discounting people, sizing people up, prejudging people. I see it all the time. I mean, people, you know, have done it to me. People, you know, do it to my clients. People do it in the DM. People do it all the time. They just judge you. They look at you. They think, okay, she's not going to buy from me or I don't think we're going to do any business. I don't want to have a conversation. And I'll share something with you that happened to me in December. I was on a Zoom, and this was a high level event. About every quarter, I attend a high level event. And this was a high level event in Los Angeles, but, you know, obviously streamed live because I'm in London. And we were in breakout, you know, we had breakout rooms, and we were supposed to be three or four in a room. And I ended up in a room with a man. And, you know, he didn't look like my target audience. And, you know, me, I immediately said, hello, how are you? you know, and he started, you know, he paused and he said, well, let's wait until everyone else joins us. And we only had 7 minutes. And I said, no, let's dive in, let's start. And so I said, tell me about you. And he said, oh, you know, I used to work in Silicon Valley and I'm a VC. And I said, oh, tell me about that. And he said, well, you know, I work with, you know, mostly, well, at the time, you know, Series A round and not a lot of angel, you know, we weren't sort of in the angel space, but, you know, we were doing about, you know, $30 million raises. And I said, oh, so how much money have you raised? He said, 750 million. And I did the math and I thought $750 million. So he said, yeah, but I'm not, you know, doing that anymore. You know, I'm working on a new sort of health, you know, app and I want to get into the health industry. And I said, have you ever thought about teaching people how to raise capital? I said, I meet so many women that are looking to raise capital. So he started telling me about, you know, how to, you know, raise capital in the different stages and, you know, what I should share with women who are raising capital. And mind you, 7 minutes. So I said, oh, I said, okay, are you on LinkedIn? And he said, yes, I'm on LinkedIn. I said, oh, okay, let me pull you up on LinkedIn. Let's connect on LinkedIn you know, we'll connect further. Bam, 7 minutes. And you know what I did? I've already introduced him to 3 women. Mm.
So you're always on the lookout. You understand the value that's sitting before you and not to discount how you may be able to connect or if it's not for yourself, for someone else.
Exactly. And you know, like he is such a good source for me. You know, I check in, you know, we have a Zoom, you know, I've referred him to people, you know, like it's so, like, you know, he's part of Stanford alumni. Like one of his business partners works with Peter Thiel, who wrote 0 to 1. So talk about major connection, you know? So that's what I teach women how to do.
Mm. And I hear, you know, again, I keep hearing the thing confidence coming up because you had the confidence to say, actually, let's not wait for the rest to join. Let's use this time wisely and be able, you know, you got one-on-one time with them. Again, this asking for your what you want, like you have a lot of confidence.
Asking and taking control because, yes, you know, he probably, you know, was like, oh, well, I don't know who she is. You know, but he's a lovely man and a great resource, but I didn't feel intimidated. Okay. You know, I didn't go to college. Okay. He's Stanford alumni. Okay. We are so far apart in terms of, you know, the educational system. Right.
Right.
But it didn't stop me, you know, because again, I know I have something of value and, you know, I offered him advice. I said, you know what, why don't you, you know, teach, you know, people how to raise capital. He said, I never thought about that. You know, he's like, wow, that's interesting. You know? So
yeah,
again, you just have to be mindful and show up and focus on the other person and adding value.
That's so great. So if people, you know, one of the things that happens a lot, I go to networking events and I see other people too, and you get cards. You come home, you have a big fistful of business cards. What should we be doing then when we have this?
Oh, that's such a great question because back in the day when we were going to live events. And so I would always tell people to collect cards. Do not give cards away because people, you know, 67% of people follow up once, only 3% of people follow up more than once. So what I do is I say, you know, be the collector, collect the cards, create a system, and then follow up, you know, don't just collect the card and, you know, store it in a shoebox and forget about it, follow up. But now that we have so, you know, gosh, there's so much going on now, so much access, you know, you can, you know, connect with them on LinkedIn. You can add them to your email list. If, you know, if they give you permission, you can book a phone call with them. You know, there's so many ways to follow up and stay in touch, but you have to get here's the key you have to be very discerning, you know, in the process, mm-hmm. so you don't waste time. And once you latch on and, you know, this is a valuable connection, like I shared, you know, the $750 million man, you know, that's a valuable connection, you know, so nurture those relationships. You know, I don't stay in touch with him every day or every week, but every quarter I will check in with him. You know, I will say hello, because there could come a day where, you know what, I might be in a position where I'm with someone and they need to raise $30 million and I'll connect with him and say, you know what, I have someone who's looking to raise $30 million. Can you tell me what we should do? Can, you know, are you available for a quick Zoom? You know, so that's true capital building.
Right. So when you come home and you have a fistful of cards, be the collector. It's easy to go, hey, great to meet you last night. You know, maybe we'll talk again in the future. Then when you said only 3% follow up more than that. And if we don't have anything to not to pitch them or to connect with them on, are you literally just dropping in and saying hello? Is that weird or awkward? what are we following up with if we don't if there's not immediate connection and, you know, maybe down the future, is it more of a wondering if I can help you?
How are you doing? I kid you not. When I talk to, I'll call him the $750 million man. I checked in with him and he was skiing in Oregon. And we were talking about skiing and I said, oh, you know what? I learned how to ski in Oregon, ironically. And we were talking about skiing. We're just, you know, just staying in touch because I value that connection. And there's a great book that I love. It's called Power Connector, Judy Robinette. And she actually practices something that I had been doing, you know, again, naturally. It's called the rule of 155. And what she, the way she sets it up is you essentially put people into categories and you follow up with them. You know, some people are, I think she said, every week, some people are every month, some people are every quarter, some people are every year. And so it's 5, 50, and 100. But you can check out her book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she has a formula for that. And this woman, you know, she's like dealing in the billions and billions of dollars. Like she definitely has a $1 billion Rolodex. She probably has like a hundred billion dollar Rolodex because she puts together high level deals and she helps people, you know, billionaires, literally. She's connecting billionaires, but that is her philosophy. And when I read her book, I thought, okay, if she's doing this, okay, there's definitely something going on with what I'm doing. So I'm just going to bring it to, you know, every woman in the world, you know. So that's sort of another reference for me, for sure.
Power connector. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, when you look back on, you know, what you're doing with helping people leveraging their networks and building their social capital, what have you come to know about the power of networking?
Gosh, that's a great question. That it's never old. It's not something that, you know, dies down or, you know, it's happening all the time. And this is, I sign my signature, my members, when I send them announcements, # keep connecting, # I connect women. Because for me, it's never ending. And it's part of your life. Like if you really want whatever you want in life, you can achieve it, but you have to, it's going to require you connect with the right people. And so you have to be strategic when you're out connecting because like literally, I mean, I can say this, that it's responsible for my life. I mean, how did I get here? Like,
you know what I'm saying? Right.
Like, let's be real. Like, how did I get here? You know? And it's definitely networking. It's definitely, and I often say I have three superpowers, networking, communication, and sales. My three superpowers, but definitely networking, you know?
Yeah. And I know I read it somewhere in your material that you don't reach your goals without connecting with people. And I think that's, you know, it's this power of collaboration. Is there anything that you want to say about networking or what you do that I haven't asked you about?
Oh, gosh. we covered so much. Gosh, we covered so much. We even promoted some other people. I'm always honored to have this conversation. I think, again, for everyone listening, think about the people that you know right now that you haven't connected with in a very long time that could be a source, a resource. Reach out to them and just say, how are you doing? That will break the ice, because oftentimes people say, well, I haven't talked to this person in a long time. And what do I say? How are you doing?
Mm.
That's it.
Simple. If someone wants to connect with you or find out more about what you do, what is the best way for them to connect with you or find your stuff?
Connect with me on the number one business social networking platform in the world, LinkedIn for sure. And also FEM Global 500, the French version, FEMGlobal500.com. Those are the two
biggest places.
Yeah.
And from there, and if they just search your name, if they go to YouTube or any of those places, you'll be able to see what she's up to. And she's teaching like classes on there, and she's very good. You know, you were talking about like Miss Popular versus Miss Profitable.
Oh, that's my favorites.
Yeah, I was like, wow, he's got some really great stuff there, really great material, especially for people, women in particular, who are trying to build their businesses, but anybody listening who want to use the power of connection and just, you having these conversations makes you think about, okay, what else can I be doing? And especially for someone in sales, I mean, that's what it's built on is connection. So I appreciate this conversation a lot. I just have a few, I call it Soul Sister final round.
Sure.
What have you come to learn about the power of being you?
Oh, that's a big one. Woo! Yeah. I have chills. Like, woo. I think self-acceptance.
Hmm.
You know, because in the beginning, you know, I thought that there was something wrong with me. I didn't think I was good enough. And I struggled with that. And I really had to accept myself. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, I use the tagline, don't let the glitz and glam fool you, because I'm still me. I'm still flamboyant, eccentric, contrarian, you know, and I embrace my, you know, idiosyncrasies. And I'm okay with that. And I'm also okay with people not liking me. I'm okay with people judging that, you know, they're allowed to do that. We're in a free world, you know, people can do that, but I'm not affected by those things anymore. And I'm just me, I'm just doing my thing. And so it's definitely self-acceptance.
Love it. What has become abundantly clear to you?
Abundantly clear that I am enough.
Mm.
And I'm good. I had to throw that in.
But your energy is infectious.
I had to throw that in there. I'm enough and I'm good. I'm good. But I'm flawed. I'm perfectly imperfect.
Aren't we all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And lastly, what does the world need most?
Connection.
Of course. I love this conversation. It was such a fun conversation, but a meaningful one and practical. So I hope people will listen to this who are building their business or be encouraged to look at their capital, look at networking in a new light, and of course, always connect with you and you can help lead the way. Thank you for your time, Aunt Janita. I really appreciated it.
Thank you so much for your time. This was absolutely amazing. Thank you.
Awesome. That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.